What's up, Toasters? This is the Toasty Podcast. My name is Sky. I go over a different investing topic every week to help the average Joe like me. This week, I did an interview with Chris from Flourish Financial Planning. He helped me out, showed me some things, told me some things, and we didn't just talk about investing. Imagine that. So, without further ado, let's get toasty. All right, Toasters, it's that time again. I don't often get the chance to tell you how I got started, and honestly, I don't want to bore you with the entire story. Actually, if you want that, you can check out my website at skyfi.co. One of the main things that made it super easy to get into podcasting for me, though, is Blueberry. Blueberry is absolutely one of the best podcast hosting services around, and it's priced cheaper than most of them, even Podbean. The fact is, a host is normally just a host. But Blueberry is more than that because they created a stellar WordPress plugin that makes it as simple as writing a blog post to upload and distribute your latest and greatest episodes. How awesome is that? I don't want to ruin the recipe, so I won't go too far into the details, but I think you get it. If you've ever wanted to get yourself out there and start podcasting or creating new exciting content, now's the time. The hardest part is actually starting, and trust me, I get that. Hit me up with any questions you might have on podcasting at my email listed in the show notes. Peace, love, and podcasting. Now, back to the show. So I guess we can get started. This is kind of for you too, you know, just to explain your story, but I guess I can start off with just asking, like, what got you started in investing in general, you know?
Sure. Yeah. No, you know, certainly a piece of, and I don't want to hijack too much of a conversation to go this way, because I know a lot of your podcast is about investing and things like that, but, a lot of my background, Jeremy and I's firm, we do financial planning, right? And so it's wealth building is what we're kind of going for people. And a portion of that is tax planning and projections and making the most of how things are allocated and things like that. But the overall goal behind everything that we do is building wealth for our clients. And that's kind of what I'm passionate about. So I went to school at Baylor studying financial planning. I got my master's at Kansas State studying financial planning. And I loved this aspect that we could help people build their wealth over long time horizons and do that through a variety of means because, you know, a lot of people are stressed about their financial situation and things like that. And so we got to, through this profession, we get to kind of act as a counselor in some areas and a coach in some areas, while still having the technical expertise of investments and taxes and insurance and things like that. And so I liked pairing the two together, you know, working with people and you know, doing analysis and knowing the technical advice for financial planning. And so a career where I got to pair both of those up was amazing to find. I enjoyed it. And so my firm, Flourish Financial Planning, and I know, I don't know how much we want to go into, but you know, we were thinking about having Jeremy on the call too. So Jeremy and I merged firms at the beginning of the year because he loved the tax side of things and I love the financial planning side of things, and we can kind of do both of those better together, partnering our firms up. And so, you know, both of our firms are fee only, or I guess now that, you know, we kind of merged firms, we're a fee only advisory practice. And so we don't have anything to sell people. We don't have, you know, products to push onto people. We don't get paid to make specific recommendations or anything like that. We got to really hear about client situations, and make a recommendation that's tailored to their specific situation. Rambling a little bit there, but
oh, you're good. You're good. I just kind of what I want to hear. You know, I want to hear your story pretty much. So, we don't have to talk specifically about investing. I like the idea that you get to help people as well as do it. That's cool. By fee only, what does that actually mean?
Yeah. So the technical, use of the term fee only is that we're not getting paid by outside parties. Typically, if you're going to a broker, they might get 5% of your investment up front to recommend a specific product, or 4% to recommend a different product. Hopefully they don't, but they do have a bias to put you in the more expensive product if they're getting paid more compensation to recommend that product. And so by being fee only, we're not paid by any products. We don't have anything to sell people other than our advice. So we're paid directly by clients instead of by third parties to recommend things to clients. You know, there are a lot of clients, prospects who come to us and they'll say, you know, not would I pay you, because we are good by clients, why would I pay you? The sad truth of it is there are advisors out there that are saying, yeah, you don't have to pay me anything and I'll give you financial advice and invest your portfolio for you. But pretty much that advisor is getting paid by underlying product sales and things like that. The client just doesn't know about it. So to remain a little bit more independent, unbiased as much as we really could, we're fee only, so we're paid by the client directly.
I'll help a little bit. I get that. That's awesome. So how did you meet Jeremy? I mean, how did you guys been friends a while, or?
Yeah, we started our own practices at the same time, which was about 2 years ago when we kind of split off. I split off from doing high net worth investing and financial planning and wealth management, which is typically, we mentioned fee only. Typically, to get fee only advice, you have to have a portfolio of $1 million and you're paying a percentage of the assets. So I think that the last financial advisor guest that you had on said that he did it for 1%, and that's the average typically, but you have to have $1 million to invest to kind of get access to fee only advice typically. And so we both started our firms at the same time, trying to open up that access, so you didn't have to have $1 million to work with a fee only advisor. We want to kind of spread that out to people who may have high income, but all of their money's in their 401k, or might be small business owners, and their business is their biggest asset. And so they don't have access to, even if it's $1 million business, if they don't have that $1 million to invest with a fee only planner, they didn't have access to it. And so we kind of structured our firms in the same type of way, where we opened up this fee only access. And of course, we're not the first people to do it, but there's a small portion of firms that have been opening up this fee-only access to people who don't have $1 million. So we started our firms at the same time, had very similar mindsets, very similar clientele. We're just doing a lot of the same things. And so we said, let's do this together and be able to serve more clients more efficiently because of it.
How big would you say you guys are? I mean, like by yourselves before you merge, I guess you could say like amount of clients you had or something like that. I don't know how you would gauge that, honestly.
Yeah, it's hard. There are different ways to gauge it. Whether it be from a traditional way is, hey, here's the amount of assets that we have under our management. But because of the way we structured our firm, we've got some clients that don't have assets under management because we're advising it in their 401k. And they're paying outside of our management. So without getting too technical, we just looked at it and together, since we've merged, we've got about 40 clients, 40 households. So I think that was about 30 to 35 for me before the merge. And then Jeremy and his team had about five households. However, they were doing a lot more on the tax side of the business, right? So he also has a tax, we're both partners in it now, but he kind of heads up the tax side of business, filing returns and doing projections for clients and, you know, bookkeeping and all that kind of thing. And so he really liked that. He liked the tax side of things. That's kind of his background anyways. And so he, you know, naturally focused more time on that side of the business.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. That's something that I'd love to get into at some point with Jeremy, if he's available, but, cause taxes are something I want to talk about as well. Honestly, just being like accountant side of things, you know, like whenever, so like whenever you're looking at a stock or whatever, and you see like there's balance sheet or whatever, you know, the, having any kind of mindset for being an accountant helps. So,
yeah.
What's up?
It certainly does help. And I would say too, so Jeremy actually, you know, he can be an expert in that, but, you know, we're both CFPs, certified financial planners. And just how your taxes kind of impact or are impacted by your portfolio is something you have to consider. And you know, I had it on things I wanted to touch about because, I think it's a focus of, how you have to manage your wealth, because it could really, diminish your overall return if you're not paying attention to, the tax consequences. And that's more personally, the tax situation personally, rather than the business side of analysis and tax. You know, one example that I can think of fairly easily is, you know, if you've got clients or, you know, listeners to the podcast that, let's say you want to do some kind of trading on different stocks, but you also have another kind of subset of your portfolio that you're just going to let it ride with mutual funds that you've selected, and you're not going to do as much trading on it. You know, a general thought is if you're going to be doing trading, utilize a tax deferred account like an IRA and do your trading in that side of things, because you're not going to get hit personally with those taxes until you take the money out of the account. And then your more tax efficient side of things, the money that you're just kind of buying, holding and letting ride, you know, you can keep that in a taxable account or things that are going to be taxed, because it's just not going to impact you as much, and it's going to, you know, help your overall return when you're looking at things.
I like that. That's cool. So I guess the next thing we can do is kind of go into, you said you kind of wanted to talk about some of the psychology behind investing, and I love that. I absolutely am all about it, just because that's probably the biggest part of it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Keeping level head, I guess, you know. Sure. And you mentioned something that I had actually never heard of, Fama Finch. Is that, am I saying that right?
Fama Finch. They're two Nobel Prize winning economists. And so we use a lot of their research, if you will, and portfolio construction and things like that. And we can keep it at a high level. I don't want to get too technical for people. People probably don't want to listen to that. But yeah, I love the behavioral side of finance. I think it's extremely important. Your last guest said something that, you know, lots of financial advisors might tell you is, you know, it's more time in the market than timing the market. Because if you're trying to, you know, if you get emotional about it and the stock drops and you're selling it when it's at its lowest point, that's not going to help you very much, right? If you're really looking at more of the time in the market over a long period of time, right, your odds of, you know, financial, you know, growth on that asset becomes a lot stronger. So I'll go ahead and say my disclosures too. We can get some of those out of the way, just because, you know, I'm a financial advisor. We are heavily regulated. And so there are a lot of things that I might not be able to say, or I just want to kind of give these disclosures that, you know, anything I say here is not a recommendation. for any kind of, you know, sell or purchase of a security or a fund or anything like that. It's more, you know, we're coming on here to do education and things like that. And everybody's financial situation is different. And so anything that I say here, it, you know, isn't applicable to everybody, but it might be applicable to some people. So it's not general advice that I'm giving out here either. And then I can't endorse anything else that's, you know, said on the podcast or advertisements or anything like that. But you know, that's kind of what I've got for a disclosure front of things.
Oh, that's fine. Got to have it somewhere, you know? So
yeah, we got to have it. I want to say unfortunately, but also there's a benefit to it, to make sure that people aren't, you know, that people know the right information before working with advisors or things like that. So there's pros and there's cons to it. It's definitely a lot of work to keep up. But, you know, jumping into the behavioral finance side of things, one of my favorite examples, and you can look up some of these videos online. Daniel Crosby, I'll give him the credit. He is a great psychologist. He's a doctor. He does the psychology of money. He's written a few books. He did these videos on YouTube called On Your Best Behavior. And there is tons and tons of great behavioral finance information in there. I would highly recommend it. I'm assuming you have a way to kind of link to things for show notes or things like that. But
yeah,
I can also put a page on our website, flourish-fp.com/toasty, and I'll put some of these resources up there too.
That's cool. That'd be awesome. I would love that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll get on that and have that available for anybody who wants to look at it. So one of his things on the behavioral finance side, which I love this. I think it's a great picture to look at. He's talking about action bias. And what action bias is, so imagine, you know, get this picture in your head that there is a goalie at a soccer match, and it's penalty kick time. And in these penalty kicks, you've kind of got three options as a goalie. You can dive all the way to the right, you can dive all the way to the left, or you can kind of stay in the middle area to block whatever the penalty kick is, right? And so when they did a study on goalies, and they said there were, how many was it? I think they just said the majority of people, the vast majority of goalies dove dramatically to the right or to the left. However, if you're thinking about the actual numbers and probability of stopping a goal, if you stayed right in the middle, you actually had a 60% chance of stopping the goal. And so the thought process here was, why do they dive? So many of these goalies dive all the way to the right and all the way to the left. And it's because of this thought of action bias. They want to look like they're doing something. They want to, you know, if the ball does go all the way in the corner, they don't want to be just standing still in the middle because it makes it look like they're not caring or doing anything, right? And so how they related this to your financial situation is there are several studies. One of my favorites was from Fidelity that said, let me see if I can get the number here. Fidelity did this study where they looked at all the accounts at Fidelity, huge, you know, brokerage firm, and they said, okay, which accounts, which investors have done the best over whatever time period they were looking at? And they found out that the best performing accounts are the accounts where the account owners had completely forgot they had an account there. It's crazy. Daniel Crosby kind of calls it the bizarro world of investing because it doesn't make sense. You know, it's almost like if you want to get fit, you sit on the couch and don't do anything. And that's how you get fit, which doesn't make sense in any other aspect except for some of the crazy psychology pieces of investment and wealth building. Another study was they looked at gender tendencies. Men traded 45% more than women. And so, and single men traded 67% more than single women. And so, if you're looking at it, men on average are trading more, and they looked at how that affected their returns. And on average, men underperformed 1.4% percentage points, and single men who were trading more performed 2.3%, you know, underperformed by 2.3% percentage points each year. Yeah. And when you look at it over, you know, that's an each year average. And so if you compound that out over the lifetime of, you know, however long you're investing, 40 years or however long it might be, that's a huge, huge piece of your wealth that's gone. And the study was trying to show, hey, this was kind of what your action bias. If you're feeling like you have to be trading a whole lot, it could actually be hurting you and not helping you as much.
Wow. Yeah, that's I mean, that's kind of true too, though. I mean, you notice that in your own portfolio if you actually trade a lot. You know what I mean? I don't know. I just feel like one of the first things I did whenever I got started investing was that, you know, I felt like I should always be trading a stock somewhere, somehow, you know, and that didn't work. So,
right. I mean, you might hit some winners. You certainly could. However, even if you hit some winners every now and then, if you're in a taxable account, you're paying taxes on your trades. And you've also got, maybe not as much now that they've gotten rid of some of the commissions, but, you know, used to, or depending on where you are, you'd pay commissions every time you traded. That's mostly still happens with mutual funds now, and not as much ETFs or stocks. But those things would degrade your return. And not only that, but you also have to get it right twice if you're choosing a stock to trade in and trade out of. You've got to get in at the right time, but you've also got to get out at the right time. And that just kind of compounds your, you know, it makes it less likely for you to actually hit it right both times and have success on both ends of that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. All right. So what would you say for, well, first of all, I mean, do you think it's possible for an individual guy like myself or anyone really out there to do it right and have it a way where you are positive and everything without using a financial advisor or someone like that? Do you think it's possible?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. It's possible. You know, in part, it's going to be how much time you have to, you know, do the research on your funds or your stocks or whatever you're trading. You need to have the time to know what you're doing. You need to have the time to actually manage what you're doing, if that is you know, rebalancing or looking at taxes at the end of the year, or you know, it's certainly possible to do it on your own. It's more of a, hey, here's the time that I'm taking to learn how to do this. I will say that you can look up the study, or I'll put it on the flourish-fp.com/toasty. There's a study by Vanguard, you know, Behemoth Vanguard of the Vanguard company. They did the study on, okay, what is the value of financial advisors? You can certainly get it right on your own and be fine. What is the value of financial advisors on a kind of percentage or dollar standpoint on how that affects your portfolio? And all of these, you know, this kind of information wasn't about the financial planning side of things, similar to what we do with making tax projections and tax decisions for you and retirement planning and budgeting and the whole gambit of things. This is more just looking at the investment side of things. And the study actually went into, let me see if I can pull it up here. So another disclosure, this is all just averages and each situation was different, but on average, they kind of jumped to the conclusion that having an advisor could benefit you from 1.5% to 3% on your portfolio. 1.5% of that was behavior coaching. Advisors have maybe a little bit more experience, or they've taken a step away from your portfolio emotionally, where they're not going to necessarily sell you out at the bottom. They're going to kind of help coach you through, hey, we've had a market downturn, but it's actually the time to jump in instead of jump out of the market.
Right.
And that impact, just having an advisor there to be able to help coach you and get you away from your portfolio emotionally, on average added about 1.5% if done correctly. Mm. Rebalancing added 0.26%. Tax efficiency, which is, something that Jeremy and I kind of specialize in with withdrawal strategies or where you're going to place certain assets, was 1.1% on average. Asset location, which is also a tax strategy, is 0.75%. So all these kind of things outside of investment selection added, up to 3%, I think a lot of times people think of financial advisors as they're going to help you pick the best stock or pick the best fund to use, when actually that's more of a smaller piece that can impact your overall return and overall wealth. It's some of these other areas that have a much bigger, impact. I think, an appropriate asset allocation scored close to no impact from what the advisor added.
Right.
On the report.
Hmm. All right. So now I guess we can talk about, you guys specialize in taxes, right? I mean, getting out of retirement and stuff like that in the best way to not have a lot of taxes sure. charged and stuff like that. Am I right? Is that kind of?
Yeah. I mean, so you can kind of think of taxes in a couple of ways. Most people think of, I'm going to file my taxes in April. And pretty much, the forms that I receive, my W-2, my 1099s, all that is going to tell me how much I owe. I'm going to use a tax preparer or a TurboTax, and I'm going to just pay what I owe. And then the flip side of that, which is more what we do, is we're going to help you plan for your taxes to, try and reduce your tax liability or get more tax efficiency in your portfolios, right? Okay. So in general, some assets or some asset classes might perform better on an after-tax basis by putting it into a Roth account. And some other assets might perform better on an after-tax basis, putting it in a tax-deferred account. And then, what you're left with, or the most tax-efficient assets, should be in a taxable account. That's a strategy called tax location. Putting those specific types of assets in, whatever accounts that you can to make them most efficient is what, adds that, 1.1% or whatever on to your portfolio.
Would you go into that? I mean, as far as specific assets, I don't know if that's too much of the how the sausage is made, but.
Well, I don't want to say that it's that, like I'm withholding information.
I wasn't trying to throw that on you. I didn't mean it.
No, like disclosure wise.
Oh,
again,
got you. That makes
everyone's
sense.
Everyone's situation is a little bit different.
Right.
But in general, just to think about, income producing assets, assets that if you're thinking about it in a taxable account are going to spit out income every year, no matter what you do. Let's say you held it for 30 years. Some mutual funds, some assets are going to be spitting out income to you throughout the year, even if you don't sell it. And so based on your situation, it might be a good idea to move that asset into an account that's not going to be taxed. 401ks, IRAs, even Roths, you're not going to see the tax impact of that every year it spits out income to you. You're not going to be taxed on it if it's inside of a tax sheltered account. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. So basically, like stocks that provide dividends and things like that, you might want to put those in.
You're looking at your dividends.
Yeah.
dividend distributions from mutual funds, interest. You know, there's something in mutual funds and mutual funds that you could look at turnover. You know, if you've got an actively managed mutual fund, which we can go into some of my thoughts on actively managed mutual funds after this too, you're going to have a bigger, again, walking the line of disclosures and stuff. You might have a bigger tax bill because if there's a lot of turnover in the portfolio, at the end of the year, they might distribute that to you. So, you know, those are some of the things to watch out for if it's in a taxable account, and it might help to move that into something that's more tax deferred or tax free, like those other retirement accounts that you have. In general, too, you need to be able to put your, you know, look at your entire portfolio, say, in general, I want all of my accounts to look like this, you know, 60% stocks, 40% bonds, and all the sub allocations, you know, below it. And then you kind of have to, you know, make a puzzle. You know, it's almost like a puzzle that you're creating where you're going to move this piece of my 60% stocks into a Roth account, maybe, or, you know, whatever it is, so that the entire puzzle, when you look back at all of your accounts, it still kind of comes to that 60%, 40%, or whatever you kind of decided it needs to look at. But your individual accounts, your Roth might look like it's 100% stocks because that's what you've put in there, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. Your whole portfolio is a lot more than just one account.
Yeah, and and the tax efficiency of it is that every account that you have might not look like that 60-40.
Right.
But your overall might still look like that.
I think I did a post a while back that was kind of just explaining the fact that your portfolio is a lot more than just your one account or two accounts you have, and people need to think about, you know, big picture, I guess, things they have outside of that too. Maybe you include houses you own or things like that, you know. But I was explaining assets more. That's what I was explaining, but kind of fell in line there. Mm-hmm. You said you wanted to go into something else earlier. I can't remember what it was. Mutual fund, actively managed mutual funds. That's what you wanted.
Actively managed mutual funds.
My listeners already know how I feel about mutual funds and things like that, and I don't really like them. So don't be afraid to just say whatever you think, you know.
Yeah. Going back to the beginning where we said, let's touch on some of the research of Fama and French, where, they're the Nobel Prize winning researchers in economics. This kind of goes along with some of the things that they've said, but, let me pull up some of my notes here. I think that you've mentioned before, in one of the podcast episodes that I listened to, you know, efficient market hypothesis.
Yeah.
Right. Does it work? You know,
is it real?
Is it real? Right. And so for your listeners who just at a really high level, are thinking of efficient market hypothesis, the hypothesis of it was, hey, there are so many trades being made every day, and this is where the passive kind of investing kind of falls, is that there are so many trades being made every day that you can put money in a passive investment and follow the trends of everybody, of all the information that's out there from all of those trades. Everything's going to be priced exactly right. You can't find a deal anywhere, and you just kind of ride it out. And there are different thoughts on how strong of an efficient market hypothesis you want to believe. Is it where you can never find a deal and you can't beat the market at all because everything's always efficient? Or, you know, on the other side of things, maybe you can find a deal, maybe you can, you know, with inside information, you can, you know, get a better deal and make a trade that is beneficial. Well, obviously, insider trading is illegal, and it's not going to make you much money there. But I would say, you know, and we kind of alluded to this earlier, you can certainly do it on your own. And similarly, you can, I think that you can probably find deals. And if you wanted to trade specific stocks, build out a portfolio of specific stocks that's diversified, you can certainly find securities that may not be efficiently priced. And you can kind of make a buck on it that way. Not that that's my recommendation, but I think that it's out there that markets do behave from emotionally. You know, there are times where emotion is priced into the market.
Well, I mean, just recently, I think there was a day where the coronavirus was a thing, and then it seemed like the market reacted to that, which doesn't make any sense to me, but. There's just a lot of things that go into play where you're like, why would they react to this?
Right, right.
Or even political stuff. It's just,
So the market certainly, I mean, whether it be trade war or politics or just news headlines, really, the news headlines can have such an impact on what a retail investor does. And that's going to, you know, move the market, whether there's a fundamental reason to move or not. And so I wouldn't say, you know, the extremely strong efficient market hypothesis is the way to go. However, I would say that in general, you know, markets are sometimes, you know, in the range of fairly priced. And to make it easy, you know, you talked about doing it on your own. You can certainly do it on your own and investing, that is. And, you know, if it's passive funds or just following the market in general, you know, that's an option for you that's out there, that's easy. And because of the efficiency of the markets, you know, you may not outperform the market because you're just following the market, but how much return do you need? A market return? Would that work for you? You know, if you're thinking, you know, that's something we can go into too, is how much risk do you need to take? How much return do you need? Do you need to beat the market or you want to just follow it?
I mean, the market last year was freaking crazy. So it was good. I mean, it was high. So if 28% is not good enough for you, I'm not sure.
Right. And I think everything went up too. And I think, you know, bonds increased in value and, you know, cash did fine. And so, you know, how much return do you need? How much risk do you need to take? We can go. That's kind of more of the financial planning side of things. And, you know, what are you saving for? How much risk do you need to take? Do you want to take more risk and have an opportunity to, you know, possibly lose it? Anyways, back to the efficiency of the markets. A general study that kind of reflects this. You know, you've seen those things where you have like jelly beans in a jar. And you're trying to guess how many jelly beans are in the jar.
Yeah.
Closest guess would win or whatever it is. Well, there was a study done. There were a lot of people in the study. I forget how many there were. But guesses ranged from about 400 jelly beans in a jar to 5,400. Huge range of how many, you know, what's in the jar, right? When they got all of the answers and they averaged it all out, the average was 1653 and the actual was 1670. So, you know, you can have this huge spread of, I think it's this amount, I think it's that amount, but the average of all the information got decently close. That's not saying somebody couldn't have guessed it right on the head or within 10, which is better than the average. But the average is pretty close if you want to ride, you know, with the average and just accept that.
Yeah.
So kind of taking it back to passive versus active. Actively managed funds, they underperform 83% of the time. And that's over a 20-year period by a study that was done by a large mutual fund company. So actively managed, so professionals who manage mutual funds every day are watching the markets. You know, they're inside of this. They can't beat their benchmarks 83% of the time. which is surprising. And some of that is the turnover in the account from trading a lot with the action bias, you know, that we talked about before. Some of that is the larger fees that you pay on actively managed funds. So yes, you can pick a winner. One of those, you know, 17% of funds that actively manage and outperform their benchmark, good. But odds are you're going to miss out on the winner, you know, if 83% of them aren't, you know, outperforming their benchmark, and then you're going to be underperforming. And the thought with passive investing is, hey, I don't need the risk of underperforming. I don't care to have overperformance of the market. I'll just follow the market. And that's where you get some of the passive funds like Vanguard funds. Yeah. Vanguard has some actively managed funds now.
I hear, a lot of people talk about just having the a 500 index ETF and just throwing their money in there and letting it go, you know, but.
Yeah. And, you know, with one fund of 500 companies, you're not very diversified. You've got one asset class and it's one portion of thousands and thousands of different companies and stuff. And there's a fund company that's only available to advisors. I'll say, you know, we use some of this fund company. Because it's only available to advisors, I don't care to mention the name of the company.
That's fine.
For compliance stuff too. But, you know, they outperform their benchmark 85% of the time. And that's because they're a passive investment. So passive investment, but they're not an index investment. And so going into this research of Fama and French said, hey, we have looked at years and years and years of data and said, there are these three factors. Is what they came up with, three factors that kind of outperform the market on average. And this fund company says, hey, we're going to overweight those funds and underweight the funds that don't have those factors. And because of that tilt that they have, they're outperforming 85% of the time instead of 75% or instead of 17%, which is what actively managed funds are. And they're passive, so they're cheap. They're not doing active trading. They're saving on costs. And so, you know, those are some of the options that are out there, that it's not just index passing, passive investing. There are some other passive options too.
We've hit a lot of stuff. Cool. So what would you say? There's a thing I heard the other day about, I guess they called it like a horse race or something like that. And it was like at the beginning of the year, you have bonds in, I think, a Roth, and then you have stocks in a regular IRA. And then you wait for what's going to happen for the year, I guess. I don't know. I heard this on another podcast called Listen Money Matters. But basically, it was to, in order to avoid taxes or, you know, get a better return, whatever, you're going to see how bonds are going to do for the year or see how stocks are going to do for the year. And before April hits, because that's the end of the tax season, you would roll over those bonds or those stocks into the opposite, into the IRA or the Roth.
Yeah. So I haven't heard the podcast, so I don't know if I exactly know what you're referring to, but it kind of sounds so. Do you know when that was? That a recent podcast?
This was like, it may have been a year. I'm not sure. Within the last year for sure.
Okay. Well, when there was the new Trump tax code, whatever they're calling it, the TCJA, it got rid of something that sounds a little bit like what you're mentioning, which was, hey, you put money in a, what was it? I haven't thought of it since it's not really a thing anymore, but you put money in an IRA, I think, a Roth IRA, and you let it go throughout the year. And depending on how it did, you would convert it into an IRA or, you know, something like that. But it's not a thing anymore. Trump tax code got rid of it. So if that's it.
Oh, well, dang. Okay.
That's probably not helpful.
No, that's good. Honestly, honestly, it sounds like you know what I was talking about, even if you don't know the podcast. That's probably what it was, because it was probably within the last year or whatever. So I feel like the last year was the first year of the new tax code, right?
Yeah, it went into effect for 2018 taxes.
Okay. It wouldn't surprise me if it was just an outdated podcast, to be honest. So, well, anyway, cool. I mean, we've covered a lot here. Is there anything else you want to add? Like, I mean, for you guys?
I don't know if there's really a whole lot else. I think that if I was to advise, be careful what I say. I'm not advising your listeners. I'm not making recommendations on this podcast.
Right.
Look at your overall financial situation, right? If the underlying thought of your investments is, to grow your wealth, to build wealth in the long run, there are a lot of ways to do that outside of just investing for higher returns or anything like that. We talked about how much risk you need to take in retirement pictures for older people, or younger clients perhaps could take a little bit more risk because they have a longer time horizon. But how much risk do you need to take? Are you comfortable with whatever the average of your allocation has done? Or do you need to risk it a little bit more to reach whatever your goals are? And that's where kind of an overall kind of comprehensive approach to your financial plan it would really help out. Maybe that's a little bit of a plug for using a financial planner. But I think it's outside of investing, financial planners can be really helpful in just finding ways to grow your wealth through. I know there's a lot of financial advisors that help you negotiate higher salaries. Well, that's going to have a huge impact for your overall wealth. If that's what your goal is, not just a higher investment return,
right,
that's going to be, something. Saving money on finding the right insurance, getting insurance that you're not sold into that is extremely expensive, but getting kind of an unbiased approach to, hey, here's how much insurance you need and the type that you need. Can save you so much money in the long run that, those kind of recommendations could be, less risky and save you more money or build your wealth more than your investment side of things.
I mean, it sounds like even if
having
it's not
appropriate investments,
even if it's not investing, it sounds like maybe you guys, there's a reason, it makes sense. To have to use, for a financial planner, it makes sense, even if it's not just for investing. I think that there's a lot of people out there that could use it,
Yeah, and it's not going to be for everybody, especially if you really enjoy what you're doing with investing. You like digging into the company financials. You have the time to, take hold of your entire financial situation, do the reading and the research on the tax code or whatever you need to do to make wise financial decisions. If you enjoy that and you have the time for it, man, go for it. I don't want to, deprive you of any pleasure you're having by doing it. Most of the time, financial advisors, I can't say most of the time, but you can find a financial advisor out there that does more than just investing for you and helps save you the time and stress of your overall financial situation. I think the last study I showed that 97% of financial advisors or financial professionals have a product to sell, whether that be an insurance product or, they're getting paid by the recommendations that they put into your portfolio. And so finding one of those 3% of advisors that are fee only and have this approach where they can kind of bring a little bit more unbiased review of your financial situation can really help.
So speaking of that, I recently heard about a company that does, I guess, financial planning. It's all of the above, but I think they have a lot of their own products they sell. It's called Primerica.
Sure.
I would like to know your opinion on it, first of all. I don't use it. I don't plan on using it, but I have a buddy that actually went into working with them. and recently, and he quit his job and stuff like that. And I guess he's doing well with it. I'm not sure, but what do you think about them? And do you know what they do, like, specifically? I don't.
So they do have their own products. I believe, so I haven't worked for them or worked with them. I believe they do insurance and may have started in that and have moved into also doing investments. And so again, yeah, they have their own products. That just having a product to sell to somebody doesn't make you a bad person or make you give wrong advice to people. They can still do financial planning, right? And they can still give good recommendations, even if you have a product to sell. Sometimes it's a little bit limiting, though. If you've got, an example of this is, let's say you hire a plumber to fix your sink, and you hire the best plumber out there. Great person, he's respectable. He, is honest in his work and his quotes and all that. But you give him a hammer to fix your sink. If he's just limited to using a hammer, he's not going to do a great job, even if he's the best person to do that and he's got a great heart to help you. And so that's a little bit where finding somebody who's independent on what they can recommend, not limited to, hey, here's our products that we can provide to you. Some of it might be a good fit for some people. Some of it might not be the best fit. Or outside of our company, you might find something that's a little bit better fit. You can find it independently elsewhere. That's kind of the thought to why we went fee only, because we didn't want to be limited like that. So I think I'm positive. There are great people working there giving great advice, but they do have a product to sell too.
Right.
Which is just something to keep in mind when you're doing your own research and working with them. I haven't worked with them personally, so that's probably the most I can say about the situation that's with Primerica.
Gotcha. I want to say, I think their return was low this last year. That's why I was asking, because I don't see why it would be that low. I don't know what funds they're in, my buddy, or anything like that. I'm not really sure about that. But anyway, that was just an off subject kind of question. As far as I'm concerned, I think we hit everything pretty head on. You think?
Sure. Yeah.
I think it was good. Well-rounded. Yeah. I obviously want to do this again because, I want Jeremy to be involved too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. After tax season, he'll have a lot more time.
Right.
To, be part of it. And two, it's tough with, us merging at the beginning of the year. We've kind of been all hands on deck with, making sure everything happens, efficiently and moving clients between different firms and things
right.
like that. And so, it is a busy time. We'll get them on
yeah,
here.
This is a big time.
I appreciate you having me.
I'm kind of glad I caught you guys when I did, honestly, except for the fact that I know you guys are super busy,
Yeah, so. we're busy, but I know, Jeremy would say this too. We're loving it. It's good to be busy. There'll be a lot of late nights, but I just really enjoy what I do and being able to do that and provide that for more clients. And Jeremy would say the same thing on the tax side of things. And being able to do that more efficiently for more clients, and we were able to reduce our fees for a lot of clients because we're more efficient in doing it together. It's been a blast. I love what I do. Jeremy loves what he does. I thank you for having me on without Jeremy today. I know this is kind of our first meeting, but I've enjoyed it. Just kind of talking through some of the things that I'm passionate about and believe, without giving recommendations, some of the things that I can say for people.
That's what it's all about, man. So what was that website you said? I'm going to go ahead and see if I can write that down real quick.
So I can post it on our side of things, and I don't have links up yet, but I will. You can do flourish-fp.com/toasty.
All right, let me go ahead.
Flourish-fp.com. That's our financial planning business. And then I'll create a page for Toasty for resources.
I'm getting my docs up right now. I usually do like show notes and things like that, so I'll probably put it in there as well. But some of the other, we might want to go through again some of the other research, stuff like that we had, so I can put that up as well.
Right. Yeah, I lost you for a little bit. It says network bandwidth is low, but I think you said, you know, we'll put links to all the stuff that we mentioned.
Oh, right. Yeah, I was talking about the show notes. So basically, I'll put links to the things we were talking about. So Vanguard Research, right?
And there was so if you do a Google search, there's Vanguard Advisor Alpha is one thing I listed.
Right.
There is the French FAMA research, which I don't know if you find, you know, what all you can there, but Daniel Crosby was On Your Best Behavior. So I think technically it's OYBB is how he has that labeled on YouTube, On Your Best Behavior by Daniel Crosby, OYBB. And there's a lot of them up there, and they're all good.
Okay.
I have lots of stuff in my notes from that, but it's good.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to put some of that in the show notes as well. And then you can just email me whenever you happen to get the chance to create that webpage. Don't worry about it. If it's not like soon, I'm not worried about that either, but sure. That'd be a good place, good resource. So. And that's flourish-fp, and then it'll be, I guess, /toasty or?
Yeah, flourish-fp.com /toasty.
Boom. Okay, perfect. And I'm going to be sure and I'm probably just going to link the flourish-fp-fp.com by itself. That's probably all I'll link. Because, I mean, obviously, I want to show them your site and everything, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, I think that's about it.
Cool. Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for letting me do this, man. It's awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
The more people I can talk to, the better. I'm trying to just spread the word and get as much info as I can from people that actually do it. Yeah. I think that's very beneficial to some people that don't know about it. There's a lot of hearsay in investing.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to just sift through the noise for the listeners, you know, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll set a reminder after tax season to get in contact with you about Jeremy hopping on.
Cool. Sounds good, man. Well, it's been fun. All right.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. You take care. Feel free to reach out if you need anything else from me.
All right. You got it, man. Thank you.
Stay toasty.